Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry happily sits alongside great business. In practice, we all understand the importance of creating a great patient experience, or a customer experience if you're in general business, but for us, a patient experience. The challenge, of course, is sometimes knowing how to do that. And one of the things that I've observed over a long period of time is that customer service from the multinationals, the telcos, the banks, and all the rest of it is so low that to actually create a favorable and positive experience isn't that hard. We just need to know how to do it. Yet for some reason, it doesn't seem to happen consistently and with intention. Today, I'm joined by someone who I regard as entrepreneurial royalty here in Australia. Justin Herold is an amazing entrepreneur. His story is phenomenal. He started way back when with $50 and turned it into a $20 million empire with the Attitude range of clothing. He is the 2005 International Entrepreneur of the Year. He's the author of 8 books, which probably makes him a bit of a masochist in my mind to write 8 of them. I've only written 1 and that was hard enough. So 8 is phenomenal. And he's running a website these days called Customer Culture. And it's an incredible resource because it's really to the point. It talks about the specifics and the practicalities of creating a rocking customer experience. So Justin, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and taking the time out of your day, mate. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Mate, I want to wind the hands of time back a little bit because I don't think I could forgive myself if I got off this interview and didn't ask about the Attitude range of clothing and how that all started, because it's a fascinating journey. And I was a teenager when that was all happening. I think you and I are similar vintage. Can you tell me how that came about? What was the genesis of that business and how did it take off and explode so quickly?
It was a bit by default, more than designed at the start, I guess. My dad's a minister, and so I've always grown up being a minister's son, I guess. And the problem that I faced is everyone inside the church, besides my parents, mind you, but everyone inside the church had this opinion that they should be telling me how to live my life. And I have a rare disease, which is no cure for, and that is I speak before I think. And one day I was 25 years old, it was 1995.
Yep.
And a lady came up and she said to me, Justin, you've got an attitude problem. And I said, no, I don't. And she said, you answer everyone back. And I said, no, I don't. And she said, well, until you fix your problem, you're going to end up in a scrap heap of life. And so whilst most people would get themselves in a tither over that, I just thought I'm going to have some fun. So I thought if I can get some T-shirts made up with I love my attitude problem, I can get my mates tonight to wear them to church. And that way that would just really sort of stick it in their face. So I went to the bank, as we all do when we decide to start something, and did my financial research, which just put my key code in. And at age 25, I had $1.25 in the bank, so I really couldn't piss her off. So I thought, what else could I do? So my brother then lent me $50, and I went to a printer and got him to print up 4 shirts for $50, which wasn't an easy thing, but I managed to do it. And then after that, I sold 3 of those shirts to 3 of my mates, which one of them was my brother. And we all went to church the following Sunday. We all walked in at the same time, and I upset that lady in an absolute heartbeat, which was fantastic for me. And that was all I really wanted to do originally. Still do, actually. Still do enjoy upsetting her. But that's the only thing I wanted to do. On that day, people came up and said, I really like your shirt, Justin. Could I buy one? And I thought, okay, I suppose I could sell it. And I started my business that way. And one thing that I teach all of my clients, especially all when I speak, is the best way to grow a business in an organic growth perspective. So my 3 shirts I sold could make 6 shirts, because I sold those 6 made 12, 24. And that's essentially how the whole thing started.
Wow. And it got to about a $20 million business, which is phenomenal with all the bits and pieces that came from that. So Yeah, as you've gone through that journey and scaled up, I mean, that's a massive scale, 20 million from 50 bucks to 20 million. What were some of the challenges and growing pains you went through on that journey? Because I imagine that what started off as a bit of a laugh to upset the old Chilcot church, then you're suddenly into serious business. You've got big money, you've got team, I imagine. You've got all that sort of stuff going on. What were the things that you had to go through to create that empire?
You know, I think I was very lucky in a way, because when I started Attitude, the internet didn't exist.
Yeah.
Which made it very, for me, very easy. Well, a lot easier than today, because today there's so much, I'm going to use the inverted commas as I'm speaking in my little fingers, there's so much information out there in the marketplace. Whether it's right information or not, people seem to take it as right straight away. So they Google everything and they go, this is how it's supposed to happen, or this is what I'm going to experience. Well, I didn't know that. So the age of the business coaches and all mentors and all that wasn't a huge thing at the time. So there wasn't all these non-expert experts out there telling me what will or wouldn't work. I just had to, you know, for me, it was really upsetting the lady. And that was the only thing I wanted to do. And after the first year, we did about 980,000 turnover in the first year. I didn't know if that was good or bad. I just thought, okay, well, it seems to be working. So I didn't really concentrate too much on all of that stuff that people seem to do these days. They measure their success by their income, which is one way you should measure it, but there's more to it than that.
Of course.
And I probably figured out pretty quickly that the business thing was the thing I was good at. Even though the only thing I passed at school was recess, I actually figured out that this whole business thing was something that I actually was quite natural to me. And things like, well, it's common sense. The only way I go about doing it, all of my businesses now, is a common sense to go with the 1 + 1 = 2 mentality. And so if I was trying to sell one, I had to make two more. I wanted to make sure, and this is where customer service was a big thing right at the start of my business. I knew I had competition. Didn't know who they were at the time, but I knew there'd be other clothing brands out there. And that just meant I had to provide more than just a piece of clothing to an end user or to a retail outlet. There's got to be more stuff than that. And for us, it was always about the client experience or the customer experience. And that was the thing that then created word of mouth. And then that, you know, we never spent a single cent on advertising in the entire history of Attitude. And it wasn't at the start, I couldn't afford it. So that was the main reason. But after that, it was more about going, well, hang on, there's got to be another way that we can grow this business. And for us, it was about just giving people who came in contact or had a touch point with my business, give them a great experience. And by that, if that happened, then they'll go and tell other people. So our biggest referrers were stores that we were actually selling to. They would then refer us to sometimes their competition, which was bizarre in itself. But in the end, Attitude in Australia, New Zealand, had 2,500 retail outlets that stocked my brand. So the process worked.
Yeah, and what was the time frame around that, mate? Because, again, it probably, from the outside looking in, seems like an overnight success. But, you know, it's the old story. When you're living it, it doesn't feel overnight at all. What was the time frame that all took place over?
Yeah, I was actually called an overnight success the other day, and I have to say to the person, it's taken me 25 years to get to become overnight success. I'm pretty happy with that quickness of all that. From go to woe, from when I started to when I finished it, it was just under 7 years.
Wow, okay. That's phenomenal trajectory, mate. Well done you. That's terrific.
Yeah, but as you said before, like, I didn't realise that was a good or a bad thing. I just thought that should be how it worked. And I think what any business owner listening to this, what they need to do is actually stop comparing themselves against what's happening in the marketplace, whatever the hell that is. Or, you know, my accountants still try to do this, and I tell them not to, giving me the statistics for the industry. I don't care about the statistics of
the benchmarking.
Never have. Like, my statistics is all I worry about. And are we going well? Are we not going well? Am I taking my kids and family on holidays? Are we doing okay financially? And that's why I am in business. If the answer to any of those is no, well, I've got something to fix now.
Totally. And it's really interesting. I was talking to someone earlier today about comparisons. And the danger of comparisons, of course, apart from what you said, is you don't know what's good or what's not. You just keep forging your own path. But my experience with comparisons, Justin, is sometimes you can feel a little bit superior and other times you can feel a little bit inferior. And I don't think either of those emotions is particularly helpful. I think it actually hinders progress.
Yeah, look, the way I totally agree, because the way I view myself, I'm a bloke who sold a few T-shirts. That's as far as I've ever gotten. The writing of the books, things, that's the thing that surprises me the most, because I couldn't read or write when I left school. And it once again, there's a thing that I fell into that I didn't know I was good at, because I hate to tell you this, but it only takes me 7 days to write a book. Didn't know that was a good thing or a bad thing until my publisher said, that's really fast. You could have told me that 7 days ago. So there's certain things that we don't know, even as business owners, we don't know what we've got as a natural talent or a natural skill. And a lot of the time is because we're putting ourselves in comparison mode to try and either keep up with someone else or look at what, and I love these on online, the checklist of what I'm supposed to do now is in my particular business. Who says who? Yeah. And I would be the least businessy bloke you'll ever come across. So works for me.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I love it. That's fantastic. The fact that you just get to forge your own path, and I think that's one of the joys of being in business, is there isn't a rule book. You can just get to do what you like. And, you know, there'll be some things that work and some things that don't, and that's cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, well, it's my business, my rules. That's always been my mantra.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, house rules belong to you, mate. That's exactly right. I wanted just to circle back to the touch points and the creating the experience with your retail outlets, which, of course, is, you know, a lot of the work you talk about now around marketing and customer experience. I don't want to mention companies off the top of my head by name, Optus, Telstra. Sorry, couldn't help but Freudian slip. Exactly. But really, I just wonder how we've gotten to this point in the world where customer experiences are generally just so bad. And I guess, you know, on one hand, it is so bad and it's frustrating when you have to deal with these organizations, yet it is completely, in my mind at least, an opportunity to be the opposite of that and to do something different and to actually stand out in the crowd. So, but before we get to how to stand out, why is it that we're living in a world where customer experience, like, everyone talks about it, yet no one really does it?
I've got the answer to that, because this is what we have to deal with, especially the larger organizations that we work with. I actually prefer working with small organizations given the choice. But what's happening now, it is, and it's a technical term I'm going to use, they have a burn and churn mentality. That's it.
Yeah.
They don't can custom, and you try and do this in a small business and you're stuffed.
Yeah.
But customer retention is not something that is a priority to them. So they know there's another sucker coming along at some point in time. And I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but I always do. But, you know, putting a call center offshore, there's the first way that you can really ruin your customer experience, regardless of whether they're good or not having the people are not the issue. It's the process of doing that to save money that already is going to be a negative in most customers' heads. Then you get the language barrier and off we go and there's more drama going on.
Yeah,
I read a really interesting statistic the other day which shocked me and shocks most people when I tell them, but this will give you the absolute answer to where the problem is. And it was on the Bureau of Statistics website. Now, if you ever want to fall asleep, that's the perfect place to go and read. But in the last 3 years, in all their statistics that now and studies have done, only 27% of adult staff has had any, and any as in any, formal training at their workplace, which means there's 73% of staff with zero training in the last 3 years, and that's where we get this problem. So the culture now within most of these businesses is like it is because they've actually never set a baseline.
Mm.
So they allow, and that the one thing I never do when I employ is I will never read a resume, because as if you're going to say to me, I really suck at customer service, you're going to tell me what you think I need to know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. So, and this is where a lot of these larger organizations, what they're doing is reading a resume going, wow, that's awesome. You should now be in charge, without actually putting any of these people to the test.
Yeah.
Or more so, and this is where you can't do this in small business, they don't listen to any feedback that's coming back to them.
Mm.
So you can tell one of the companies that we've all mentioned here where they actually suck in their business, and they'll go, yes, we'll note that down and pass it on.
Mm.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Never going to get to anywhere, nor do they care.
Yep. And that lack of caring is really apparent as well. And, you know, it's the talk to the hand because we don't give a toss kind of routine. So mate, you spoke about...
Well, what I teach people is, and the one thing, it's always been my mantra with my staff, but and we've got it up in signs all around my businesses, but we have every day, I want my staff and myself, the owner, to come to work with gas. Yeah. I'm giving them permission to have gas every single day, come to work, which means we want you to give a shit.
Yeah.
That's what I want you to do, because the customer is begging for that these days.
Yeah.
And what most people in business don't do is they don't actually go out themselves to shop and then go, well, that was a really bad experience. The connection then to go, let's make sure we don't do the same thing to our customers, seems to be missing with a few people these days.
Yeah.
And the one thing we never want to have, well, I never want, is people ringing up complaining, because I'd really rather not deal with that. So the best way for that not to happen is let's make sure there's nothing to complain about.
Mate, totally. Exactly right. So one of the things that I like to say is, you've got the GAS acronym, is I want people to come with batteries included. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to rev someone up. So when I'm looking at a CV, and I must admit I do look at CVs, but put that aside, I'm interested in, have they got batteries? Because I don't want to have to jumpstart someone every single day. I want someone to come to work ready to roll, and I want someone who's able to plug themselves into whatever power source they need to come to work fully charged, ready to go. And, as you say, give a shit about the customer, because that's what matters most. That's where it is. And you spoke about customer retention, and interestingly, you've written 8 books. I've only written 1, but mine was on patient retention in dentistry. And you know, a mate of mine read the book, and he said, so really, the working title should be "Don't be a dick." And I thought, that's probably it.
Hmm. That's the problem that probably you face and I face. Like, my second book was called "What Are You Waiting For?" Now, my problem was, the whole message of it is get off your ass. The problem with that is I had to have another 55,000 words to win with that. So it was a pretty simple one I wanted people to get. And I think if, as business owners, if we just simplify, see, my principle of growth in business is easy. You simplify, then you magnify. But if we come back to the customer experience, let's simplify the process for our staff. Not that they need it to be simple, but it's actually not that hard. You know, like you said, don't be a dick. Just be nice. And even if you don't know or something goes wrong, and that's happened, I'm at the process of buying a car at the moment, and they've just stuffed it up in a few places and they've just now pushed back the delivery, blah, blah, blah. Now, because the guy's a nice bloke, it's okay.
Yeah.
If he wasn't, it wouldn't be okay.
Yeah.
So that's where we need to teach. See, I'm not sure about you, but when I was escorted out of school, but my first job was at Super Kmart, they called it back in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
And I became a trainee manager, and they put us all through the Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends and Influence People course.
Okay, good.
Now, that was stuff that they used to do in the olden days to actually set and lay a foundation.
Mm.
This is where most businesses are not doing that at all with any of their staff.
Yeah.
So as I said right at the start, my business, my rules, which means if it's my rules, I need to teach my staff my rules.
Yeah.
And if we don't do that, then that's where the client experience starts to suffer.
Yeah. And it's really interesting as well, because just to come back to the car situation you've had, if the guy selling you the car wasn't a nice dude, it would be an issue that these things have gone amiss and awry. And I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes things don't always go to plan. The customer journey or customer experience or whatever you want to call it. You know, sometimes it's not all rainbows and unicorns. Sometimes stuff does go wrong. But if you're a decent human being and you've invested in that relationship and you're just not being a tool, then you can recover that quite well. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And that's welcome to business. Like, I keep on saying this to my mentoring clients, but if success was easy, everyone would be successful. So the odds are it's not going to be that easy sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's just part and parcel. Like, I never expected my journey. If other people look at it from the outside, they go, man, that was easy for you. No, it wasn't. But I actually didn't know or didn't assume it was going to be in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's the same with when we're dealing with different types of personalities. And that's the one thing that I try to teach staff, especially when they're doing our courses, is what sort of personality are you? Because that's going to have a massive impact on the people you're dealing with if you don't understand what personality they are. And you've got around about 3 minutes to figure that out. Now, that's a skill that we had to learn back in the olden days. And all of these foundational things that we all, anyone I reckon from 40 plus, we all had to learn because the owner of the business knew that if that business didn't work, he was going broke. So that was all put in place back then. And I'm going to upset the youngers if they're listening, we didn't really get treated with kid gloves if we were young. Our feelings weren't really taken into consideration, thankfully, because otherwise I would have had every day off. So we didn't have all this fluff that now goes. Yeah. Now, my staff know I'm a no-fluff bloke. So do your job, do it well, go home. That's it. And make sure that people come back again if you're going to deal with them during the day. That's not really that hard to get your head around.
No, it's really not. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate it and we over-engineer it. I want to talk to you a little bit about easy though, mate, because here's my observation. And again, probably going to upset some people here. What I observe is a thing called the initiative gap, where people kind of go, I get that I should do all that sort of stuff, but Justin, it just seems a bit hard, mate. Mm. You know, really? Isn't there a shortcut? Can't you give me the 2-minute noodles version of that?
Yep. And you see this in retail a lot now because they used to have salespeople in retail. Now we have order takers.
Yeah.
So they'll sell well as long as you take that product up to the counter and tell them that you want to buy it.
Yeah.
Other than that, nothing's moving out of that door. And because they don't get taught that sort of thing. Like I do a lot of, which is funny in itself, but I do a lot of work within the hair industry, but no hair, and the beauty industry. My wife owns a salon, but that's about as far as it goes. So I do a lot of work in those areas. The thing that shocks me about that those two industries, that in the actual formal training process at TAFEs or colleges or wherever they go, they don't get taught sales. Right? Now, as an owner, or my wife is, of a very successful day spa, that's part of what you've got to do.
Mm.
Now, the amount of people that have come and gone, that's not what I do. My skill is in the treatment. Well, that's fantastic for you. So there's a lot of things that have been missing. Mm. Now, I do blame, and this will, once again, I'm always upsetting people, so I'm trying to get it over and done with early on in this interview, but I do blame lazy business owners for this.
Yeah.
And trying to be friends with their employees. Now, my employees think, you know, I'm pretty cool bloke, but am I always easy and nice and as you said, rainbows and unicorns? No, not at all. Some things go bad, and so I'm going to have to be a bit harsh on getting it resolved. But they understand that. But there's no treat me like a princess because I'm 18 years old. It doesn't happen. And I think it's one thing we've got to educate our staff to actually, I'm going to get in trouble, suck it up, sister or bloke. Just suck it up. We're here to do a job and let's just do it well. But I don't turn up to work, even as the owner of now 12 businesses, I don't turn up to work going, my customers owe me. I turn up to work going, I hope we actually impress a customer today because otherwise I can't go on that holiday or I can't pay my house or I can't do something. So it's something that I have to think about every day. So I just want my staff to think about it every day.
Yeah, totally. So just coming back to the customer thing, mate, because you're talking about order takers versus, you know, in retail, the order taker versus someone who used to be a salesperson. And of course, sometimes people turn their nose up at salespeople, but I think salespeople, and I mean the proper salespeople, are some of the most highly valuable and skillful people in the world because they're solving a problem, right? They're solving a problem for whoever the customer might be. Now, in our case, that customer is a dental patient. But what I'm finding really interesting, and again, sometimes Justin, do you remember the Muppet Show? Remember the two old guys that used to sit up on the side and, you know, throw peanuts? And sometimes I do feel a little bit like that in the sense that I feel that in today's modern world, we've become transactional. We've become the order takers. We're waiting for people to tell us what to do. And in a dental practice, particularly, and I'm sure it's no different in many, many other businesses as well, but it's really a relational type of exchange. No one goes to the dentist generally because they want to. You know, I'm yet to have a person walk into my dental chair and say, "Hey Jess, it's so good to be here. I can't wait for you to do that root canal." I'm just, you know, wetting myself with excitement. Said no one ever, right? So the thing around that is if we understand in our business at least that people see us as a necessity rather than a pleasurable thing. And yes, some people come to us for cosmetic, you know, dentistry and they want an outcome there. But it really has to be relational. And so what I get bemused and slightly confused about is, if we understand it's relational, why do so many people behave in such a transactional way where, you know what, I don't know that I can pick up the phone, but I'll send you an SMS that kind of stuff. And I'm just going, well, what is that? Why is that happening these days, do you think?
Well, I think one of the main things that people have either forgotten or never learnt, and we were taught this really early on, I think it might have been even in the Carnegie thing that we did, but when anything becomes an emotional buy, then price is irrelevant. Right? Now, yeah. I can prove that with my wife, handbags and shoes. Now, she doesn't need a new handbag, doesn't need any new shoes, but she's going to get them. Because if she gets the handbag, then she needs new shoes. If she gets the shoes, she needs a new handbag. And so the consumerism gets caught up in the process. Now, I actually do put, even though I've said to you before we started, dentists aren't my favourite places to go, the dental process is an emotional process because either I'm in pain,
yeah,
I have a physical thing that's happening that I've got this tooth knocked out, I'm looking a little bit like a hobo. I've got, well, even the beauty thing, that's the easy one. That's emotional. Yeah. So all these things are emotional. I need to get this resolved. Now, when that happens, and there's great relationship that goes with that, and it's one of those, it's all about connectivity. It's about connecting with the people.
Yeah.
Then, and that starts from, and this is where, I'm not saying dentists, because I think the dentists that I go to now do it well, but it actually starts from when you walk in the door and see the receptionist.
Yeah.
Right. And where this is where, and I'll use a hairdressing example as to where this goes wrong. And it's a little bit of a tale, but let me just, if you don't mind, I'll go through it. Mary is a housewife. Mary is single, not a single mum. She's a stay at home mum. Hubby goes off and works. Hubby comes back. Now, Mary wants to get her hair done probably once every 8 to 10 weeks. But so she's been saving up her own little pennies on the side, taking some that they put aside for her as well. And so she's been saving up. Now, it's coming up to the time that she wants to go to the hairdresser. She's really hesitant to tell her hubby because he just thinks it's a total waste of money because every time she comes home, it looks exactly the same as when you left. So he doesn't even see the benefit of going to that. But if you're talking about a box of beer, sees a massive benefit of that. So there's a big disconnection on what's relevant, what's not relevant, but that's irrelevant to this whole thing. So the day comes, she goes off, the kids are at school, she goes to the hairdresser, and she's there now, yes, to get a hair done, but to also escape.
Yeah.
So she goes up to the receptionist and says, I got my appointment. The receptionist is having a fantastic day. She is in a great mood. Awesome, big tick. Gives it to the stylist. The stylist is having a great day too. Things are going fantastically. So far for Mary, great experience. Stylist gives it to the apprentice who's at the basin, who is pissed off with the world because she's been working there for 3 weeks now and she should be running the place. And all she's doing now is sweeping up hair and washing people's hair at the basin. So she is in a foul mood. Now, straight away, Mary's expectations have now been dashed. Regardless of everything that's happened up until that point,
yeah,
this one person has set the tone. And this is where a lot of businesses go wrong. They either, and we deal with this a lot in corporate, they only train management, never the actual frontline people. Mm. So if it comes to training your staff, everyone needs to be involved and all have to understand what the baseline is that is acceptable and under that, not acceptable,
yeah,
and non-negotiable at the same time.
Totally.
And that's where, like, if I go to a dentist and they say to me, well, I've solved my problem, because I'm only there for that. That's the only reason I go.
Yep.
But then they say, oh, by the way, have you thought about blah, blah, and blah? I'm more open to that if they're nice and they've had a good experience because I'm emotionally attached to this whole process now.
Yeah.
So I believe them more now than if I just went in for a random thing. And that's where we've got to understand, get our staff to understand that emotions play a massive part when it comes to buying and selling.
Mm.
So if there's no emotional connectivity, then we're stuffed.
Absolutely. And it also ties back into the retention piece as well, mate, because the more times you go back to the, you know, the hairdresser or to the dentist, the more that relationship builds, more that trust builds, more likely that over time you're going to accept things that that particular dentist says to you, and you're going to buy more that's recommended, right? Because again, you're beginning to see this person as someone who's likable, trustworthy, and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and then they become an integral part of your life. Like I still see the same doctor that I've been seeing for many, many, many years. I don't, you know, always had new cars for a fair while now, but I still refer people back to a mechanic in Castle Hill. When I had the bombing car that made it work all the time because it kept on breaking down, I still refer people, and that would be 22, 23 years ago was the last time I went and saw it.
Yeah, nice.
So referrals will go for a long time, and sometimes it's down to, well, yeah, you only get one chance at a first impression, really, don't you? You don't even get a second chance. So sometimes it's just that one time that we either can make it or we can break that relationship.
Yeah. So, Justin, just coming back to this, because we spoke about creating the experience by design rather than by default and having some sort of intention behind that, what did you do or what do you advise your clients around creating a deliberate customer experience? Is it about understanding those touch points and so on? Or what's the mechanics around that?
Well, it's about every business should come up with their own set of non-negotiables. And for me, it is about the actual experience. You can go, like if you, I was talking to someone the other day, said, oh, no point getting my staff trained because we're a wholly and solely online business. That's exactly when you should be doing it, because online is really non-emotional. But as soon as I need to talk to someone because of the online experience, it all goes downhill. Yeah. So what we've got to do is we've got to actually set our own sort of template. So for me and what we do in our staff, they know exactly what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. There's certain times that we want people to wait on the phone, all the stuff that we use. This is all the old school stuff. So if anyone's listening to this, been around for a long time, I'm not talking about anything new. It's all old school stuff that's not done anymore. So, and it's because we don't set limitations or parameters or rules inside our business because we don't upset the little petals, that's where we go wrong. So we need to set them and say, well, this is how you have to operate. But what I do with my staff, and normally when I'm doing staff talks with other companies, I get them to put themselves into, when was the last time you had bad experience? And everyone has a story about that. And I go, okay, well, what happens if that now happened when your customer walked in? What would you do? Even though they may have done it, it makes them think again, because we actually, a lot of the time, remove ourselves from how this would make me feel if it happened to me. And so I think we've got to humanize the experience a lot more. I'm not a big fan of automation. I am an old dinosaur now, but I'm not a big fan of automation because it actually takes out that connectivity, once again, with our customers. I hate the chatbot things that happen now, just a personal opinion. I don't like the autoresponders from companies. I don't like, you know, fill out a form online and there's no phone number. Because we've got to look at, you know, whilst we would love our business to operate a certain way from our own perspective, how does that suit and serve the customer? And if it doesn't, and especially if you've got competition and they're doing the total opposite and actually giving great experience, well, you're sort of stuffed then if that's the case. So what we've got to do is actually set our own parameters. We've got to set our own rules and say, okay, here's what we're going to abide by.
Okay, so coming back to the rules then, we've got our rules, we've got our parameters, we've got our non-negotiables. We go, okay, this is how we roll. This is the standard. It's not a goal. It's a standard, right? So you're either meeting standard or not. It's not aspirational. It's just what's expected. And that's the way we roll. What else do you do beyond the standards? Is it a case of training, as you say, investing in that training? Or is there a process where you map that journey? Or is it just a case of saying, here's the standards, use your common sense and get on with it?
No, well, look, there's got to be checks and balances through the whole process. This is where most people go wrong. Now, I am going to sound like I'm plugging something, but that's why I released my online program, because most businesses don't actually have any proper formal training, especially when it comes to customer service, customer experience. The one thing I wanted more so out of that is, I don't want a compliance model. That's been my biggest thing. I don't want people just to tick the box and go, yep, done that. Well, if I want a competence model. So we've got to make sure as owners of businesses that we know exactly what they're saying and what their answers are, because then we know what to fix. Don't have to fix it all, We just know the areas that we need to fix. The other thing that I get all of my people to do is do a 90-day plan. Now, so every 90 days, the staff need to sit down and each staff member will write down what they are going to do individually and personally for the next 90 days in the business, and what they're going to put into the business, what they're going to do, what they're going to commit to. And then that goes up in the staff room or whatever, so everyone can see what someone has written, what they're going to commit to. Because what this then creates is culture. So then it's not just the owner or the manager of the business going, hang on, James, you haven't done what you said you were going to do. Other staff members going, hang on, you said that you are going to turn up 10 minutes early because we all know you're late. So you've committed to that, but you're still coming in 10 minutes late all the time. So because I had no idea what I was doing, I had to sit down to them and say, look, I have just no idea what I'm actually doing. I really would appreciate your assistance in this whole thing because together we're a team to grow this business. The only difference is I get to take home all the drama. You don't. And because I was very open with them and still am, they've always had my back.
Yeah.
So, and I think we need to create that a little bit more. I'm not sure about the dental industry, whether it's a high turnover of staff, but I don't have that because I do make sure we look after our staff, but they also understand the importance of the value that they are to me as well. But that said, we've got to always keep everyone in line to make sure that are we actually following what our mantra is inside this business. I'm not big on having your mission statement up on the wall because that's fantastic on the wall. I want it in their hearts. So they all know that, and any staff member needs to know what's the bigger picture here. And ours is always be, is always and will always be, make sure the customer's experience is awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, put that on the wall, but it doesn't take up much space.
No. Well, that's exactly right. And again, it's about creating a good intention or taking a good intention and making it real. And, you know, good intentions don't live on the wall. Good intentions live inside people's hearts. And, you know, one of the things we always say is we want people to come with their hearts and minds, just not their arms and legs. You know, we want the whole person. And it's really interesting. You spoke a little bit about automations and other things. I'm okay with some automation. I'm a fan of systemizing things for consistency, but I'm also a fan of humanizing things as well, because I think the over automation of processes, the over automation of service, it's a killer. It's a total killer. And I think that, you know, what you said is exactly right. You've got to be able to have connection. You've got to be able to have meaningful interaction. And Justin, I do wonder, I think that the pendulum in, you know, when it comes to digital medium and interaction with clients or patients in our case or whatever it happens to be, I think the pendulum is going to come back because I suspect, and this is just me crystal balling a little bit, I suspect that you and I are not the only two people that think that the world's a little bit bonkers at the moment in terms of that customer journey. I suspect there is a whole bunch of people there who crave real connection, not just what you see on Facebook or whatever it happens to be. I think there's a movement around that. And I would be surprised if in the next few years we don't see a return to some of the older way of doing things. I don't know. Do you have a view on that?
Yeah, no, well, it has to. It will happen. And what will happen is people will go, oh, that's just, this is exactly what's going to happen. People will look at it and go, oh, that's just too simple. Well, it always has been simple. And that's where, you know, before the internet and all that sort of stuff, I'll give you an example. When I was still at school, year 10, I had a part-time job. I went to school at Katoomba High, the armpit of the universe, but that's where I went, and went had a job in a menswear store. Now, the day I started, the owner of the store said, look, all I need you to do, and he really simplified it, and what he wanted was huge, all I need you to do is make sure you remember the customer's name.
Yeah.
I went, okay. Remember the customer's order. Okay. And remember what size they ordered last time. Okay. He said, I said, oh, so where do I find that information? He said, in your head. Yeah. He goes, you're not writing it down. I want you to, so when Mr. Jones walked in and said, hey, Mr. Jones, how are you going? It's been about 4 weeks since you bought that last shirt. It was a medium. Do you need a medium now? Well, you look like you lost a bit of weight. You still need a medium, or, you know, or, you know, it looks like you've had Christmas too much there, Mr. Jones. You need to get a large. All that sort of stuff was one of those things that created conversation. It was all simple stuff. But Mr. Jones wouldn't take one shirt. Mr. Jones liked coming in because he actually got treated really nicely. And if you look at it, this is the biggest way that you can have an effect on your competition, because people are now searching for a way that they can connect with a business, because now more than ever, our money out of our pocket for things that we really wish we didn't have to do, we actually go begrudgingly to hand it over. Now, if I don't get an experience with that, I'm now doubly pissed off.
Yeah.
Because now I've had to spend this money and I've had to spend it on a numbnut who really did not appreciate it at the time.
Absolutely.
So if all we do is actually start to appreciate people, they'll come back.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And as you say, it's not rocket science. It's really not rocket science. It's just about, you know, being a decent person, remembering some details, making that person feel special, which they are, and be grateful that we've got a customer walking through our door, and hopefully we can do something nice with them so they come back and maybe tell their friends.
Mm.
Let's not overcook the egg. Mate, you've been around this game for a long time, and I really appreciate the time you've spent with us today as well. I wanted to ask you, just as we begin to wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, from a business owner's perspective, looking globally, not globally in the world perspective, but globally across your business, not just focusing on marketing, looking holistically, where do you think, if you had your time again, what are the things that you think you did really well? And equally, with a retrospective scope, and I know that it's not possible, but if you had that 2020 hindsight, are there any things or lessons you learned that you kind of go, with the benefit of hindsight, I might do that differently these days?
What I did well was I just went with my gut. It's the one thing I learned probably after about a year. I ended up getting sourcing out a mentor. Now it's a trendy word, but it was a guy called Harry who was a CEO of Philips, and his input into me was fantastic, and it really set the success, my success up. But the one thing he told me early on is, Justin, don't change who you are, because the business world actually will need you at some point in time, because everyone's trying to be the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think that individuality and keeping things simple, not knowing that that was a thing I was trying to do, that to me just makes sense because I didn't want it to become complex, was a big asset. And I'm still doing that to this day. Most people don't know I'm the owner of the business if they come in and want businesses, and I love all that sort of stuff. So that's cool. What did I do wrong? What could I do again? I actually have never really thought about it because I knew I was going to make mistakes.
Yeah,
I was prepared for that. I think probably trusting the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I learned early on and made sure we never made that mistake again was getting people in to train my staff that actually in the end had no skill in that. They had the great invoice to go with it, but there was actually no hands-on skill that went with that. And so now the only way that anyone can come into my business to train is if they've actually done what they're in their own business before they can come and train my staff. And so that's one thing, because I had to put out a lot of fires probably 2 or 3 years into it, because I needed to train staff because I couldn't do it. But then what they were getting taught, I'm sitting there going, that's just stupid. And that was from a common sense perspective. And it wasn't until we did a whole lot of research, we found out, you know, they actually learned a course and decided to go and take it. So they're the two things probably I'd like to undo that at some point in time. Well, we have. Never happens again. But, you know, I knew that I was going to make mistakes. But, you know, it's now a trendy thing. But fail fast is always one of those things that I tried to do. But as I said, you know, I didn't think it was going to work. So that being the case, I was waiting for all things to go wrong. And the other thing is understanding my own personality, because then I realized that I actually do enjoy drama. My staff reckon I created now and decided to fix something. But drama is one of those things. I go, yeehaw, let's go. So I embrace that. So I think that's one thing, especially the bigger a business grows or the more staff we bring on, we end up trying to do this safe way.
Yeah.
But we forget how did we get to where we got to in the first place. Probably wasn't by being safe. It's not a money thing. It's just on doing things outside the square or hiring those people that, you know, most of my staff, no one would have hired them, but I was that bloke that no one probably would have hired either. So I took a punt and they've all been unreal because they've seen it and seized the opportunity. The other thing is we train up. We've always trained up in the business. So marketing managers, branding managers have all come from down the bottom and up they come.
My observation, Justin, about something, having followed your work now for decades, my observation is that you've never tried to be vanilla, which probably would feel really weird and uncomfortable for you, I imagine. But the thing that I find for a lot of business owners is they're trying to be just like everyone else. And I love the fact that you're not. And I love the fact that you're able to upset the old lady at church. And I love the fact that you've got that irreverence about you, because I think that's what makes you you. And I reckon, mate, there's a whole lot of people out there who are just trying to play a small game. Let's not be I want to be noticed, but I don't want to be noticed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I had a conversation with someone the other day, and I said to her, it was a lady, and I said, look, you just need to put your face on your website. She said, why? I said, so people know who you are. She goes, I don't want anyone to know who I am.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big mistake, because people are attracted to people. Like,
yeah.
I like knowing who I'm going to give my money to and all that sort of stuff. And so she didn't want to do it because she wanted to stay anonymous. Well, you're going to limit. And this is where there's limiting things that we actually, by default sometimes, put inside the process of us growing a business, because we are trying to fit it around how we would like to live, which is cool. And if that's the case, do whatever you want, because I do. So I don't work past 3 o'clock during normal the week, because I want to pick my girls up from school. So my business, my rules, the way it works. And so I do things. So that may limit then some of the meetings that I take, but I understand that. But if you're finding that your business is starting to hit a plateau, it's probably because we've put all these limiting things in place over the years that you may need to get a little bit uncomfortable for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it becomes normality once again.
Yeah, totally. And the business growth never outstrips the owner is my is my philosophy on that. And, you know, if you want the business to grow, then you got to grow too, and so be it. Mate, we've covered a fair bit of territory today. We've kind of been uphill and down dale. And firstly, I want to say thank you. It's been such a pleasure to actually finally get to meet you. As I said, I've followed your work now for decades, and it feels a little bit like you and I are similar age. And so your journey is something I really resonate with. And I know that our audience is going to take a tremendous amount of value out of our conversation. For ladies and gents, if you just tuned in, we've had a really in-depth and wonderful conversation with Justin Herald, who, of course, is the founder of the Attitude Group. And you can find him. There's a couple of websites here. Head across to justinherald.com. Also head across to customerculture.com. There's just so many good resources and tools and bits and pieces on those websites. So I'd encourage everyone to check them out. There's a treasure trove of goodies. And make sure, as Molly Meldrum would say, do yourself a favor and check it out, because it's just full of good stuff. So, mate, thank you. I really, really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us.
Yeah, no dramas at all. Really enjoyed myself.
Ah, cool, mate. You're a good man. Well, let's catch up again soon.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.